Good morning. This is part two of the Decatur paper. My name is Bob, and I'll be starting the reading here. The first article is Milliken Preps for Employment. Milliken Sr., Christina Wilkie, wants to be prepared and polished as she runs as she can be before she heads into the professional world. And with roughly 500 other applicants aiming for the same teaching position, a little interview practice and networking can go a long way. Wilkie was among more than 70 juniors and seniors from the Milliken School of Education to take part in the fourth annual interview boot camp on Thursday afternoon on campus. Along with a meet and greet to connect with alumni, students were also presented with a panel discussion on topics as varied as what to expect on a first-year teacher and how to stand out among a crowded profession. For the more than 30 seniors, though, the highlight was the chance to conduct upward of three interviews with alumni who are superintendents and principals throughout Illinois. And while the interview did give a chance to receive constructive critiques about their interviewing techniques and way to improve themselves, the day was not just meant for practice. The alumni are looking to hire, said Stephanie Siegmiller, coordinator of clinical practice for the School of Education. If they find a good fit, the alumni may tell a student to reach out to them or the principal at a later time to further discuss a position. The idea was for the camp came together as a chance for some former students to give back in their own way to the university. Tom Mahoney, Superintendent, Oregon, Illinois, and a 1990 alumnus of Milliken, said he was at a conference several years ago when he struck up a conversation with two other Milliken grads, Jameel Craven and Dan Bridges, who went on to become school superintendents. The conversation soon went from reflecting on fellow alumni who became school administrators to what they could do to give back to Milliken. We just said, "What have we done to give back to the university to thank him for this?" Mahoney said. In an increasingly competitive career, Mahoney said the opportunity for students to learn how to network or make small talk with potential employers helps stand out. Wilkie, a native of Wheaton, who hopes to return to the suburban school district after graduation, said he had a better understanding of how to highlight one's achievements during an interview and how to condense points without rambling. "I think after going through today, it will really help boost my confidence in knowing those areas that I'm strong in, but also looking at those areas where I could find improvement," she said. "So when I go into actual interviews, I know that I'll be on top of my game." The next article, also in education, is Violinist Inspires Students at Muffley. When Shanoa Alamu was two, her mother took her to her first violin concert, a performance by students schooled in the Suzuki method. Though, of course, Aluma, a violinist with the Milliken Decatur Symphony Orchestra, Peoria Symphony Orchestra, and the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, doesn't remember the occasion, her mother told her that her interest in the violin was evident, and she began lessons at age three. She's originally from Memphis, Tennessee, but now lives in Springfield. "This piece of wood with a bridge has opened so many doors for me," Aluma told students at Muffley School on Tuesday, one of three schools she visited thanks to the Symphony Orchestra Guild of Decatur. "I remember my mother asking me when I was a teenager, 'Shanoa, what if you hurt yourself? What if you break a finger? What else would you do?' And I told her, 'Mom, I don't have anything else I'd rather do.'" Accomplished musicians who play various instruments visit Decatur schools during the spring semester to demonstrate what those instruments can do to encourage children to sign up for the band or orchestra, and to remind the ones who already play that the Guild offers scholarships for private music lessons and for band camp, said Dee Keller, a member of the Guild's Education Committee. Auditions for the scholarship will be March 18th and 19th, and registration is available at www.decaturorchestra.com. It's good training for the students to prepare for an audition, Keller said. Even if they don't receive a scholarship, choosing a piece and practicing it and playing in front of judges help them learn discipline and time management and how to reflect, deal with. Shaquilla Jackson, a fourth grader at Muffley, wants to learn how to play the violin and ask Aluma several questions. One of the questions kids asked Aluma was, how much do you practice? And when Aluma said that professionals in college music majors practice 5 or more hours a day, Shakira was okay with that. I would practice 5 hours, she said. I'd make it work. Aluma said it's important for music programs to continue and for students to start young, as she did, which is why she wanted to participate in the Guild's program. Our school programs are on decline, Aluma said. I know when I was their age, it was nothing for my friends to be in another school and also involved in their string program, and for all the schools to get together to have All West and All State and all the other festivals. But with budgets and whatever else, no one seems to think that music is important, even though scientifically it's been proven to work both sides of the brain and to increase math skills, to increase reading skills, to increase verbal skills, and it just really rounds out you as a person. At least that's my experience. Now I'll be reading an article from Politics. Trump notches another win in Nevada caucuses. Donald Trump notched a win with Nevada's Republican caucuses on Tuesday as Marco Rubio bid to elbow out Ted Cruz for second place in an amazingly urgent effort to slam the brakes on the Trump juggernaut. Trump now has 3 straight victories in the West, the South, and the Northeast, a testament to his broad appeal among the mad-as-hell voters making their voices heard in the 2016 presidential race. 6 in 10 caucus scorers said they were angry with the way the government is working, and Trump got about half of those angry voters. Nevada was a critical test for Rubio and Cruz, the two senators battling to emerge as the clear alternative to the GOP frontrunner. Rubio was out to prove he can build on recent momentum, while Cruz was looking for a spark to recover from a particularly rocky stretch in his campaign. Rubio, already campaigning in Michigan as caucus results rolled on, was projecting confidence that he can consolidate the non-Trump voters who have been splintering among an assortment of GOP candidates, saying, "We have incredible room to grow." Cruz, a fiery conservative popular among voters on the GOP's right, finished a disappointing third in South Carolina after spending much of the past 2 weeks denying charges of dishonest campaign tactics and defending his integrity. Another disappointing finish in Nevada would raise new questions about his viability heading into the batch of Super Tuesday states on March 1st. There's nothing wrong with this guy, Trump said, with his usual measure of tact during a massive Las Vegas rally Monday night. The former reality television star tweeted on Tuesday, "He used him as a scapegoat, fired like a dog," Ted panicked. Nevada's caucusing played out in schools, community centers, and places of worship across the state, a process that's been chaotic in the past. Contact Terry Brigda, fed up after her husband was laid off from his mining job among those caucusing for Trump. I want a businessman to run the biggest business in the world," Brigda said, as she caucused at a Las Vegas high school. Jeremy Haidt drove straight from his marketing job to caucus for Marco Rubio at the same high school. "He's the most level-headed. He hasn't said anything stupid or crazy, which is really what I think the country needs." It was Cruz for Morgan Ortega who declared, "He's consistent, he's bold, and he's a class act." Preliminary results of the entrance poll found that about 3 in 10 early caucus goers said the quality that mattered most to them in choosing a candidate was that he shares their values, slightly more than a quarter who said they want a candidate who can win in November. About a quarter said they want a candidate who can bring change. About 2 in 10 want one who tells it like it is. Nevada State marks the first Republican election in the West, the fourth of the campaign, and it's not one that's gotten much attention from the GOP candidates. Through Tuesday, the Republican candidates and the super PACs supporting them had spent a combined $3.8 million on television and radio advertisements in Nevada, just less than a tenth of the $39.3 million spent ahead of last weekend's South Carolina primary, according to Kantar Media's CMAG data. That primary reduced a GOP field that included a dozen candidates a month ago to five, with former Florida Governor Bush the latest dropout after a disappointing finish in South Carolina. Ohio Governor John Kasich and retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson remain in the race and could play spoilers as a trio of leading candidates, Trump, Cruz, and Rubio, battle for delegates with an increasing sense of urgency. Another political story, McConnell shuts door on Senate action on Obama court pick. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell emphatically ruled out any state action or Senate action on whoever President Barack Obama nominates to fill the Supreme Court vacancy, an extraordinarily step that escalated the partisan election year struggle over replacing the late Antonio Scalia. Democrats promised unremitting pressure on Republicans to back down or face the consequences in November's voting. After winning unanimous public backing from the 11 Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee, McConnell told reporters that panel would hold no hearings and ruled out a full Senate vote until the next president offers a nomination. Such steps would defy many decades of precedent that have seen even the most controversial choices questioned publicly by the Judiciary Committee and nearly always sent to the entire chamber for a vote, barring nominees the White House has withdrawn. In short, there will be no action taken, McConnell told reporters. The Kentucky Republican said he would not even meet with an Obama selection should the White House follow tradition and send the nominee to Capitol Hill to visit senators. Such a snub would generate campaign season television images of a scorned selection standing outside a closed door. "I don't know the purpose of such a visit," McConnell said. "I would not be inclined to take one myself." Obama is expected to announce a nomination in the next few weeks, since the vote started routinely referring presidential nominations to Committee for Action in 1955, every Supreme Court nominee not later withdrawn has received a Judiciary Committee hearing, according to the Senate Historical Office. With the issues certain to roll this year's presidential and congressional elections, Democrats said Republicans were topping their own obstructionist high-water mark of 3 years ago, when their doomed efforts to force Obama to repeal his own health care law helped produce a 16-day partial government shutdown. They also accused Republicans of following the lead millionaire Donald Trump of leading GOP presidential candidate who's called on Senate Republicans to derail any Obama court selection. Democrats and some Republicans believe that if Trump is a GOP presidential nominee, it will cost Republican seats in Congress. The party of Lincoln is now the party of Donald Trump, Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat from Nevada, told reporters. Filling the vacancy left by Scalia's unexpected death on February 13th is crucial because without him, the Supreme Court is left in a 4-4 ideological knot between justices who are usually conservative and its liberal wing. The battle has invigorated both sides, interest groups and voters who focus on abortion, immigration, and other issues before the court. He hasn't seen the pressure that's going to build, Reid said, when asked if McConnell might relent. It's going to build in all facets of the political constituency and the country. After meeting privately with GOP senators for the first time since Scalia's death, McConnell and other leaders said rank-and-file Republicans were overwhelmingly behind the decision to quickly halt the nomination process. "Why even put that ball on the field?" Senator Pat Roberts, Republican from Kansas, said of the hearings. "All you're going to do is fumble it. Let the people decide." The next article is a national story about man charged in Michigan attacks had no barriers to guns. A man accused of randomly killing six people in Michigan had a personal cache of weapons that included handguns, long guns, but there was nothing in the past that prevented him from owning as many guns as he could afford. Authorities seized the gun collection after the weekend attacks around the Kalamazoo area. With no criminal history or record of mental illness, Michigan residents who follow requirements can legally acquire any number of firearms. He was a law-abiding citizen up until he pulled the trigger on the first victim, said Jonathan Southwick, an owner of a gun store in Plainwell, 20 miles north of Kalamazoo. "There are no laws you could put into place to stop that from happening." Southwick said Dalton bought a jacket with an inside pocket designed for a handgun Saturday, just hours before the rampage. He did not buy a gun. "He talked with my manager for a bit, was laughing and joking a bit, gave him a one-armed hug, then proceeded to purchase the jacket and said he was going out to enjoy the weather," Southwick recalled Tuesday. Dalton did not have a permit to carry a concealed weapon, under Sheriff Paul Myers said. Dalton, 45, is charged with murder and attempted murder He's accused of killing six people and injuring two more outside an apartment building, a restaurant, and a car dealership, pausing between shootings to make money as an Uber driver. Prosecutor Jeff Getting said the weapon appeared to be a 9mm semi-automatic handgun. President Barack Obama, referring to the Kalamazoo shootings, said clearly, "We're going to need to do more if we're going to keep innocent Americans safe." His gun control efforts after several mass shootings include attacks on a Connecticut school and a South Carolina church have been rebuffed by Congress. In Michigan's capital, Representative Joe Hoadley, a Democrat from Kalamazoo, said gun violence is a critical concern among his constituents. He's supporting bills to restrict open carrying of guns in certain public places and to require more background checks at gun shows. Those bills are unlikely to get a hearing in a legislature controlled by conservative Republicans. There may not have been a way to stop a person from doing evil, Hoadley said of the Kalamazoo shootings, but that should not derail a conversation about what we can do to reduce overall gun violence. Kristen Moore, a University of Michigan math professor and member of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, said the shootings could be a tipping point to get lawmakers and the public to embrace a need to do more. But Republican State Representative Tristan Cole said Michigan's gun laws aren't lenient. He knows that the state is among only a handful of states in which owners must register handguns with local police. It's really important that we recognize this awful, senseless tragedy, Cole said, but you need to look at good policy and not react based on emotions to infringe upon the rights to own firearms. Now an article from the sports section. Hayward already making a big impression. Already impressed by what he saw watching Jason Hayward play, something else stood out to Joe Maddon during their initial phone conversation. It was Hayward's maturity and understanding of the game. Those qualities made it easy for Maddon to envision him in the Chicago Cubs lineup. "We had a really good conversation," Maddon said. "It revealed to me a lot of what I thought I was seeing. He was a very thoughtful, intellectual kind of baseball player." They talk about Hayward playing center field after winning three gold gloves in right, his spot in the batting order, and his base running. To Maddon, he seemed like someone who enjoyed chatting. To the Cubs, he ultimately became one of their biggest off-season additions. Hayward signed a $184 million 8-year contract, hoping to help bring the championship to a franchise that last won the World Series in 1908. The Cubs gave a strong indication last season that the drought could be in its final stages, breaking out with 97 wins and advancing to the NLCS. They appear loaded to make another run with newcomers such as Hayward, infielder Ben Zobrist, and pitcher John Lackey, added to a team that already boasted NL Cy Young Award winner Jake Arrieta and Rookie of the Year Chris Bryant. And there's Manager of the Year Maddon. "I've been part of good teams. Fortunate enough to say that in my career," Hayward said. "You understand that regardless of what it looks like on paper, we got to go out there and play, and we all understand that here in the clubhouse. But we're all looking forward to trying to work down towards one goal." Hayward has been drawing praise from all sections of the clubhouse. Teammates marvel not only at his wide range of skills, but his approach, his attitude, his ability to connect. They see a player that Chicago is going to love, an elite defender with speed and power and the ability to hit for a high average. He's really smart, really advanced, Anthony Rizzo said. The way he talks about the game is just impressive. Outfield prospect Albert Almora said Hayward is 200% willing to help young players. As a guy in my position, you kind of wonder how these guys are going to treat you. But the first day I met him, he shook my hand, gave me a hug like he's known me forever, Almora said. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. That he is playing for the Cubs is a bit ironic for Hayward. After all, he got knocked out by them in the division series as a member of the rival St. Louis Cardinals last season. And he made a memorable debut against Chicago while playing for Atlanta. Hayward hit a three-run homer in his first major league swing, driving a 2-0 pitch from Carlos Zambrano out to right in the 2010 opener. It was quite an entrance for a player Hall of Fame manager Bobby Cox compared to Hank Aaron. Hayward hasn't lived up to that, but Madden sees a player wise beyond his years of 26. He sees a good fit for a lineup loaded with young sluggers such as Bryant, Kyle Schwarber, and Rizzo. I need to do what I can do on a daily basis, whether it's running, whether it's coming up with a big hit, whether it's hitting a home run, whether it's making a play on defense, whether it's just talking about something throughout the game and to kind of shine light on something that we might need and make an adjustment, Hayward said. Just do what I can, and then the next guy's going to do his job, and we're all going to take that seriously as individuals, and a good product will come out of it. Hayward finished with 13 homers while batting .293 in his lone season with the Cardinals. But Madden believes his production will increase in Chicago. You have a guy, 26. Set him free, man, Madden said. Let him go. Have good conversations with him. Understand what he's trying to do out there. Who would not want to work with an athlete like that? Oh, my God, that is exactly what you're looking for to work with. And he's bright, and he's engaging, and he's fun. He is also making a transition going from right to center and being counted on to solidify the outfield with Schwarber mainly in left and George Soler in right. Madden sees no reason why it can't be a smooth move. I don't understand why people have any trepidation about this whatsoever, he said. I watched this guy cover immense amounts of ground. Now he is getting more of an up-close look at Hayward, and he likes what he's seeing. Now, a thought for the day. It is my feeling that time ripens all things. With time, all things are revealed. Time is the father of truth. That was Francis Rabalais, 16th century French writer and physician. A quick summary of the weather today. The wind and falling snow is creating low visibility conditions across central Illinois, making driving hazardous. The roads are slick in many areas, and secondary roads are in worse condition at this point in the morning. The National Weather Service in Lincoln said a band of moderate to heavy snow has set up from St. Louis, and Decatur is going to be affected today. That's all for today. This is Bob signing off. Have a good day. And keep warm. Stay safe. Stay inside if you can. Goodbye.